Welcome to the Afropolitan podcast, hosted by Eche Emole, founder of Afropolitan. On the show, we chat with Afropolitans whose footprints form the foundation of systems dedicated to building the future of a bold and progressive Black community. In each episode, our guests share their working formulas, the hard facts about leaving familiar terrain, embracing the unknown, and staying relevant afterwards. Listen as we extract the blueprints of fearlessness, innovation, and progress.
Hey Afropolitans, in today's episode, we chat with Kyle Maloney, co-founder of Tech Beach, a startup with an active community designed to connect the Caribbean with a global technology ecosystem. Kyle talks to us about his journey with Tech Beach and leveraging technology to solve problems at scale in the Caribbean. We hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Afropolitan podcast. Kyle, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing, man? How are you feeling?
I'm in high spirits, good energy, man. I had a really tough year. My dad passed away in May.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Condolences, bro.
Yeah, man. And then I got COVID really, really badly.
Wow. What was that like? And when did you get COVID?
Not too long ago, man.
In October. you said October?
Yeah.
Was this back in Trinidad?
Yeah, in Trinidad. So I got it at the start of October, and it was very intense. I thought it would be like, all right, cool, I'd ride this out. But I went through every major symptom, and it was pretty scary.
Man, definitely. I can imagine. I had COVID earlier this year too, in January, and I was stuck in Rwanda for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So they obviously you have to isolate, but my COVID lasted past the 14 days, blew into the 4 week mark, and they kept on saying, hey, you're not going to leave the country until you test negative. So it was scary, man, but I'm glad that we've both come through that, because we're still really living in a pandemic, even though we've found a way to move around normally, you know? But so let's talk through the operational challenges that COVID presented for Tech Beach last year. What were some of the struggles that happened during the pandemic for you?
So for us, our events, so let me give people context of who I am and what we right? Mm-hmm. So my name is Kyle Maloney, and I'm the co-founder of Tech Retreat. And Tech Beach is the conduit between the global technology ecosystems and the Caribbean, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we've successfully done through a series of events is build a community. And you know more than anyone the power of community, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've built an amazing community of people that are passionate about leveraging technology to solve problems and coming into the Caribbean and seeing how they can partner with companies, invest in, mentor different people so that we can begin seeing some amazing, amazing companies come out through the region. Because there's this quote that says, opportunity is not equally distributed, but intelligence and smarts, you know, is spread across all over. And so if we can create more opportunities for people who are really smart to solve problems in the places that they live, we'll begin seeing things begin to flourish in places that you'd never saw before. And so that's essentially what we're trying to create. And so within our events, that is hosted in Montego Bay, Jamaica, it's not a tough time to say, hey, come on the beach in Jamaica and chill.
Definitely not. I talk tech.
Yeah, exactly. And talk tech. So I spent a lot of my time in the Bay, and that's where we would have met, right? I mean, my time spending there building the network, I was able to bring Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, to Tech Beach. Mm-hmm. And we had partnerships with Facebook and Google and that sort of thing come through, which was really amazing. And we built this really robust community of global technology players coming into our region in this way. And within the events, we had what we called our hybrid accelerator program that took startups through a series of course curriculum, mentorship, and helping them to get access to capital just over this 3-day period. And we invited an organization called the Inter-American Development Bank. They are the largest developmental finance organization for Latin America and the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. They deploy billions of dollars every year into developing the region. Mm-hmm. And they became our partner on the event. And the CEO said, whoa, this is amazing that you're doing for these startups. How can we take this experience and really blow it up? Mm-hmm. So that was in 2019. Rolling into 2020 now, We're now launching. We signed a deal with them for just over $1 million of grant funding. And now we're launching our accelerator program. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic hits, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're like, oh my God, we're not going to be able to have any events. We're not going to be able to do any of these programs in person. What are we going to do? Figure out to do it virtually. Mm-hmm. And over 2020 and 21, we have not focused on doing events. We focused on the accelerator program. And that's been our focus for 2020 and 2021. And I saw it, I see within challenges opportunity for us to double down and do really well on the accelerator program. So the companies that come through, these companies would have raised $25 million in funding coming into the program. We began executing this year, and we've now helped them raise an additional $5 million in funding within the last couple of months. So we're really excited at what is to come for the region in this way and the role that we're playing as an ecosystem developer in that way.
Definitely, definitely. For some of our listeners who don't necessarily understand the context of the Caribbean, can you break down some of the challenges and pain points some of these startups would be looking to solve, whether it's in fintech, healthcare, ed tech? What are some companies that you're really excited about in your accelerator program?
Yeah. Great question, right? Mm-hmm. I think as we are the developing world, we face a lot of these similar challenges that you would face in Africa, right? Except the context for us is that we have a lot smaller population, right? Mm-hmm. But the challenges are similar, you know? Mm-hmm. So for us, we're solving a lot of localized problems first, right? Mm-hmm. Things like delivery. So delivery in terms of transportation of people, transportation mm-hmm. of food. We're seeing things in terms of like payments. So our leading company out in the Caribbean is a fintech company. It's called WePay. WePay has raised tens of millions of dollars. They're working on an IPO on the Jamaica Stock Exchange for next year. That should be pretty huge within our context. And so we're seeing things within health tech. One health tech company within the last year has done really, really well. Mm-hmm. They're called MD Link. They're a telemedicine company. And obviously, when you're dealing with COVID, everyone wants to check their symptoms virtually. So a telemedicine company just skyrocketed because of the context of COVID, you know? Yeah. So we're beginning to see these types of localized solutions really take form. And what they really need is that injection of capital to really help them scale and get polished and grow. Mm-hmm. And that level of advisory and mentorship coming in from some of the big players who would have experience growing these companies so that we can be seeing our first pay stack.
I love it. So in Africa, right, from an expansion perspective, expanding into a different African country, you're dealing with 54 countries that have 54 different regulations. Is that something that's similar in the Caribbean, or is there like a body you could go to where that helps facilitate the expansion to the Caribbean?
Yeah, man. Unfortunately, we're in a similar context. It's most tough for industries that are really regulated. So fintech, definitely, right? And so that's the big barrier to entry. When this company WePay has been going through country to country to unlock regulations and build partnerships piece by piece, It's a lot of work. It's the reason why a lot of the big players haven't really entered our region, because they have difficulty going and unlocking every single country in that way. It's a lot of work. I sat down with a global lead from PayPal, and this was exactly the reason why even in Africa, PayPal has challenges, or people have challenges utilizing PayPal, because not so easy. It's not like you go into Africa and bam, you know, you're in a few countries, you know? So.
It's definitely a challenge. Let's talk about the fundraising process. What advice can you give to new time founders who are looking to raise for their startup? And what are some of the challenges you're seeing in your own process as well? Because we always complain about access to capital. You barely get access to capital. I know even in today's market now, it's very liquid, right? I'm sure you've been seeing some eye-popping stats with companies raising crazy amounts in the seed stage, right? What would you say were some of the challenges to fundraising for you and for some of the founders in your accelerator?
Yeah, I think now we're going through what I would call a renaissance period, right? Whereby the first wave of your I guess A-type or box-type founders, got funding. And then the time now that we're in is diversity. Everybody wants diversity, diversity. And we're seeing a lot more capital in the hands of Black, Brown, Latino people to deploy into and being able to understand the context of people like us so that the capital doesn't look past us. And that's the big problem most of the times that has carried on over time is that the people that hold the capital and the people that are trying to get investment, if you don't understand the context of what they're dealing with, you're not going to get that money. And so now we're beginning to see those doors open, as well as we're beginning to see the capital look outside of your typical places, right? So I'm here in New York, and I'm having a couple of meetings with a couple of different funds where they're looking just globally at opportunities. And, and once the opportunities can fit within a certain criteria, they would be more than happy to deploy seed stage funding to see the opportunities grow. And so those sort of conversations wouldn't have happened before. And now I'm working to unlock doors. So we begin seeing some capital inflows into our region this way. And then in addition to that, we're working on launching our own fund. Within first quarter next year. Within first quarter next year, we'll be able to make an official announcement of that raising and the fund size and what we're looking to do around our thesis and that sort of thing. There's a lot of momentum happening around it, but I'm not able to officially make statements around it yet. But yeah, it's super, super exciting.
Yeah, it is. So one of the struggles we have in the African ecosystem is the retention of talent, right? Talent that, like, let's say if you're a software dev based in Africa, you might be looking to move out of Africa to maybe like a Germany or Europe or even to the US or Canada, right? And then you also start getting paid the same baseline salaries in those regions. In the Caribbean, is there a similar situation that goes in terms of the retention of talent in those spaces as well? Or maybe the closeness to the U.S. allows for people to not feel like they need to actually be in the U.S. They could just fly in anytime.
Yeah, exactly. So retention of talent obviously is a big problem. Talent flows to the point of greatest opportunity naturally, right? It's a natural flow of things, right?
Yeah.
Greatest opportunity based on your skill set match. And so what we're going to need to do in order to compete is our businesses are continuously going to need to innovate and be just aggressive and tap into global talent pools as well, and not just look locally for talent to solve our problems. And so what we're beginning to see happen now, actually, a door that we've just opened is that, for example, we're working with Automattic. Automattic is the owner of WordPress and Tumblr, and they have a 600-person distributed global team. They're a remote work-first organization, and they've been able to hire some really good Caribbean talent at senior levels down the chain. And now they're working with us, running a recruitment drive to hire talent from the region to work remotely from Trinidad or Jamaica or wherever in the Caribbean, working for them. So we're beginning to see a big sort of like opening happen where talent can come from anywhere and work anywhere, which I think is more good than bad, definitely.
Kyle, talk to us about your background. What is it that makes you passionate about technology? Did you have any entrepreneurial influences coming up?
Yeah, man. Definitely. So I mentioned my dad. My dad was an entrepreneur. Yeah, he was such a big mentor to me from the early stages. Some people would say that as it relates to like business, I was super, super exposed even before I could understand the context of things. But it's really amazing to be able to look back and understand those contexts after the fact. So, for example, he owned 6 clothing and shoe stores. He was in retail for early stages of life. And he would have me running between the stores to get different clothing or shoe sizes. And it was predominantly women's clothing. And so you'd have my knees putting his shoes on women's feet, you know? And to him, that was a demonstration of service and how to treat women with respect, you know? But as a kid, like, you're not thinking about this. You're just thinking, you run, you get the shoes, you put the shoes on their feet, you make sure you put it gently, make sure, you know, that their feet don't squeeze, and asking them, how does it feel? You know, like, if it's good, you know, and you run, you get the clothes, and you comment, and you say, yes, the clothes looks beautiful. You know, like, and building that understanding and appreciation, respect for women in that way, and you know, and respect for the business in that way, respect for him and my mom, you know. And so seeing those sorts of dynamics when you're young, but you're not really understanding what is going on, it takes you through the rest of your life.
Yeah,
you know, in a really significant way. And so understanding service to people, service to your community. Business begins not with understanding of trying to make money, but it begins with understanding what the problem is and continuously coming devoted every day. We'd get to get to the shop for 6:30 every day, you know, until like when the sun sets, 6:30, 7 o'clock every day, dedicated devotion, working on your craft every single day. It's like, you know, and so seeing this in your formative years really helped to mold my mind and shape me to what I am today. Then came my mom. It's like, the kids need to be engineers or doctors, you know?
Lawyers.
Lawyers, exactly, right? So my mother is like, no. They're not going to study business. They can learn business afterwards, but they need to be a doctor, an engineer, a lawyer, you know, one of these things, right? I know it's definitely similar in Africa as well, right?
Oh, definitely. Trust me.
Right? So then I went to study aerospace engineering. That gave me...
Wait, what?
I guess I just...
Bro, what? Aerospace? Okay, please definitely tell us about that experience.
Yeah, man. So in high school, my mom, the one that ensured that I studied science subjects. So I studied physics, chemistry, math, and additional mathematics. And she was really set on me learning science subjects because she really was set on the fact that learning science and math really helps train your brain to be analytical and very critical thinking, very process oriented in the way that you approach things. And she felt that that was a gap within my dad. If she felt that maybe sometimes he wasn't very process oriented, he was driven a lot by what he felt and his own sense of spirituality, fine. But she felt her being the more analytical one, I felt like I need my kids, so I'm the first of five, to really develop this sense in this way. And I did, and so did my brother, and we did well in school, and then we went to study engineering. And so I was really passionate about flying for a long time. I wanted to be a pilot, and I had a private pilot's license. And in doing so, I realized that I really don't want to fly for the rest of my life, but I still love planes. And I went to school, went to Emerald Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. My brother and I, and we studied aerospace engineering in university. And in university, we started our first companies together with two other friends that went to school with us. And that really pushed us to say, listen, we want when we come back home, finish school, to start our own companies. And it was it was really around the time where Twitter and Facebook was now picking up. I remember my professor in school saying, so who's tweeting? Who's tweeting? And I'm like, tweeting, like, what is a tweet? Right? Yeah, I remember that distinctly, right? And then looking it up and realizing, oh my gosh, like, these tech companies are really picking up, and maybe this could be me one day, you know? And when I finished school, I came home and we began on this journey, and I started my first tech company. It was called First, and it was meant to be like the Yelp of the Caribbean. Started it with my brother and my two other friends. And we raised $2 million for 25% of the company in 2014. That was 7 years ago. I was 27. And at the time we got the funding, I was 26. My brother was 24. And that really set us on that trajectory of being within the technology space. We did really well. We had a pretty expansive team and was really set on raising another round of funding the following year. But we ended up burning out the cash. It ended up being my biggest win and my biggest failure. And had me really thinking about what next to do and how to approach the situation of the lack of funding and the lack of mentorship that is available to us in the region. And I met my now business partner, Kirk Anthony Hamilton, who's a Jamaican, who really had a vision for how he can develop the ecosystem in a certain way. And took a little bit to sell me on what we're going to do. But I eventually was on board, and now over the last 5 years, we've done a really amazing job at building out this ecosystem within the Caribbean through technology. Yeah,
definitely. So it's funny that you mentioned that was your biggest failure, because what I would like to ask is, what lessons do you learn from that? What lessons do you encourage founders who've obviously failed at maybe their first startup, even their second startup, to get back on the horse and not dwell too long on the failure?
So for me, I didn't dwell a lot on it, quite frankly, because my dad, I remember him coming home one day when we had to like send home all the people from the office. Mm-hmm. And it was like a sad moment for the rest of the team. But for me, they were saying that, why am I being so stoic?
Stoic.
Right? Yeah, that was the word. They were like, you're so stiff, like unaffected. Mm. And I was kind of unaffected because I felt like I was a bit burnt out, right? Mm. We got this investment from the largest telecoms in the Caribbean. So for them, it was a strategic investment to help them. They wanted to generate cash out of this like immediately. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we were being driven too much by their direction and what they wanted to do. And growing the team faster than we wanted it to grow. We burned more money than we wanted to burn because we felt like we needed to do something. We needed to produce a result to please them versus us doing what we felt we needed to do for the longevity of the company, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So early on, I started to feel like, yeah, this is not the direction I want to go. I figure out like where next we need to go as a team, where next I need to go personally. Mm-hmm. And I began to, while working every day and trying to put my best forward, seeing what would possibly be the end. And by the time it came, I'd already come to terms and I was like, all right, so let me take a sabbatical time where I don't need to go to work every day and figure out what the next thing is going to be. Because I saw this as a stepping stone, and founders need to realize that investors love founders that have failed before, you know, because it is in your failings you learn the most. I think Jay-Z said something like he learned more from his failures than his successes. And success has this sort of like intoxicating sort of feeling whereby because things are going right, even the things that are going wrong, you feel are right because things are, you have this momentum going with you. Mm-hmm. And so you never really take critical looks at certain things that are actually going wrong. And you have this assumption that nah, man, it's right, it's good. When a lot of things that you may have been doing is actually really, really, really wrong. Yeah. But because you have this momentum of things that are going well, you never take a critical look at it. But when things aren't going well, you're taking the most infinitesimal look at every frigging thing.
You know?
What is causing this?
Microscopic at that point.
Yeah, exactly, right? So when things are going wrong, you're just like overanalyzing everything. Mm-hmm. And so it is in failure, it is in when things are going wrong, it's when you begin learning the most, you know? Mm-hmm. And so through that experience, well, that's one thing I definitely learned for sure. Mm-hmm. That was a big takeaway. Another big takeaway is that I had this vision of wanting to have this big team and really motivating people. And I learned very, very quickly that when things are going well, everyone is with you. When things aren't going well, everyone wants to shoot you because you brought them here, right? And there isn't necessarily an accountability of them making a decision as well and believing in that direction as well. It's almost as though like sometimes people feel as though like they're sheep, like, you know, I led a direction and you believed in that direction as well. Mm-hmm. And even if this didn't go well, it's not only on me.
It happens, right?
So you share in all the wins.
Yeah.
But you that take the failure. Right? So that was definitely a big, big one for me, man. Definitely, definitely, definitely. Everyone wants to share in the praise and say yes, it's together as a team. But when shit hits the fan, that wasn't
it's
me.
Leader, man.
I told you to not do this. And I told you to not exactly. So that was a big one.
It's funny because it reminds me of when I first started Afropolitan, right? And we would want to do these concerts, like maybe we could bring a Wizkid or something. Maybe a Wizkid cancels last minute because he used to be very erratic back then. And it felt like I was the one who took on most of the losses. Not all of it, right? But it was like when we have wins, it's like, okay, yes, the team comes. And I think it let me know that that's not probably the best way to run a business. You can't go into personal debt for your business. But when you're first starting off, you don't necessarily have that mentorship and that guidance, right? I feel like, actually, this is the question I want to ask. What is that process, even from the tech ecosystem, where people like us find the right mentors, find the right funding, find the right even investors to work with? Because coming up. I don't think you went through an accelerator program that lets you know, like, this is how you meet the right investor or these are the right type of people to talk to. Now you might know, right? But what is that process? What was that process for you, like finding the right mentor, finding the right people to surround yourself with in the ecosystem?
Yeah, man. I think, so like my secret sauce over the last 5 years in building this has been to get up and go and meet people and meet them at the points of their humanness. Yeah. And what I mean by that is we as human beings are inherently social, right? Mm-hmm. Even the most introverted of us, we want to connect with someone that relates with us in whatever ways, you know? And so different to spending time or trying to build this conference brand by sending emails and saying, hey, would you like to come to Jamaica? I would pay for your flight. You know, I get up and I say, hey, can you introduce me to somebody or anybody? You know, like I always have a warm introduction to someone. And you would say, hey, meet my friend or meet this girl. Let me send an intro. And the cool thing about people in the Valley, they're always so open to introduce you to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Always open to introduce you to somebody. And so it was in doing those things where we would say, hey, let's meet up at a bar or let's meet up at whatever thing that is most comfortable to you within your environment. Let me see how you're comfortable. And maybe even if it is at the Facebook office or the Google office or wherever it is, you know, like it's still within your space that defines part of who you are. I was able to build really genuine relationships with people and share the vision of what we're trying to accomplish, which was bigger than anything that was self-seeking for me, because my mission has always been, how can I raise the tide for all ships in harbor and not just for myself? And when you're trying to bring people into a vision and a goal and objective that is much bigger than yourself, that they can contribute to and feel like they're contributing to something as well bigger than themselves, you begin to get a wave of support in ways that you never realized that you would.
Yeah.
And it was in doing this approach, I was able to really meet with so many amazing people that inadvertently became my genuine friends. Now I would see them as brothers and sisters. And they themselves began being the mirrors in my life of accountability and inspiration and my mentors in various different ways, because they would have experiences, depth of experiences in certain areas that I can learn from. And so a lot of people think that a mentor is only someone that is older than them and so much more experienced. But a mentor is someone who has a depth of knowledge in a certain area that you haven't spent time doing the research in. You haven't spent time understanding in that area in that way. And so some people who mentored me were younger than me because they spent so much time learning within a certain space and were so passionate about it that I could follow their leadership around it because it made sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I think about people who have become my mentors, because I'm in a space of networking and bringing networks together, I don't necessarily have just like one or two in that way that some people think, I need to get that mentor or that guy. I have a lot of really amazing people around me that I'm able to take nuggets from, certain pieces from, and take it back home and put my pieces together and say, thank you for sharing that with me in that time that we spent together, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, Kyle, that is such a succinct way to put that. Let me ask you this, right? If the only thing left in the world was to read a book about your life, what would the title of the book be?
What would the title of the book be?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a good question. What would the title of the book be?
Mm-hmm.
I poured my heart out. I left with my cup empty.
Yes.
Something along those lines. I came, I filled my cup up to as much as I could, and then I left with it empty.
Empty.
Yeah. And so the way that I see that is that I spend so much of my life trying to draw so much resources to me so that I can redirect into people that I believe are solving problems that are meaningful to humanity, you know? And so I think there is a problem whereby not enough people who are solving meaningful problems get enough light and attention. And so I am really determined to continue to provide open doors, mentor, give access to capital, provide resources to the people that are solving problems within a myriad of spaces that we face in humanity so that we continue to propel ourselves forward, so that we are the giants. So we stand on the shoulders of the giants of our parent generations. So that is what has brought us here today. Mm-hmm. And we need to become the giants for our children. And the only way that we can become the giants for our children is if we continue to progress as humanity and continue to solve meaningful problems. And people need to see ourselves more in a collectivist sort of way, whereby we need to progress together rather than an individualistic way, whereby take, and make myself as wealthy as possible, and give me all of everything. Mm-hmm. But then the end result is that we die and everything is left. And then you know? So I really am passionate about working really hard, mm-hmm. attracting the resources to myself, to the team, etc., and redirecting into mm-hmm. people that are solving meaningful problems every day.
Definitely.
So I want to leave with it all poured out.
All done. I love it. Kyle, can you mention three books that maybe have had a profound impact on your life and your journey so far?
Yeah. My dad gave me this book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. That was definitely a mind opener. As a young boy, I got that at like 19. So a young man now coming into your adulthood, really shaping mm-hmm. your mind of how you would think. Then I read this book called One Thing. And so that really helped me as a young guy as well. And you're smart and you're thinking about so many different problems, really helped you to narrow down and focus and say, listen, you need to really select one thing and be really great at it and become amazing at that thing. And opportunities will open up as you continue to develop. But it's really important to be super hyper focused, you know? And recently, just at this stage in time where I'm at, I was reading this book called Atomic Habits. And how we underestimate the power of little changes and how these things compound over time. So understanding our mind and understanding how habits form and develop is really powerful so that we can better understand how to unlock those habits that we kind of take for granted and feel like they're unchangeable. This is who we are and this will forever be who we are, you know? And we end up being slaves to certain things that we do all the time. And so that has really been super, super powerful for me to really take deliberate steps to break certain habits and engage in new ones that I really want to do. And what ends up happening for all the times, we think about things that we really want to do and we never end up doing it because we're so locked into a certain way of doing things. And so that has been powerful for me. Those are my top three that comes to mind right now.
I love it. So what we like to ask a lot of our guests, the final question is, what does being Afropolitan mean to you?
Wow. So my experience with Afropolitan is such rich culture, energy, positivity, pictures in my mind. I'm seeing just like colorful faces, you know, of many races, you know, just like such beauty and happiness captured in one like event. Like I think of see your events, man, and I just I just immediately feel happy. You say Afropolitan, I feel happy. So for me, this is the lens. This is my experience with the brand. This is my experience with Afropolitan. I know you do like so many other things, right? It's like so many things. But the essence of what would have brought me to even experiencing those other things is that sort of first touch point of such positive energy and high energy that I'm feeling like a sense of high just thinking about it, putting myself back into that, you know?
It was great before the pandemic. And I think during the pandemic, we transitioned to virtual, especially with Clubhouse and stuff. Clubhouse, I know you came into some of the Clubhouse rooms, but I think now we've also transitioned into the media space fully, which is like we want to be able to tell our stories because, you know, like back in the day, we did, there was an oral tradition where tradition was passed down orally to the next generation, right? And our whole argument is that today, podcast is the new oral tradition, and we need to honor that tradition because the audience is the audience for the future, not necessarily even the audience now, so that they need to be able to say, hey, I listened to Kyle. This was Kyle's journey. This was Kyle's perspective on life. I mean, because we tend not to have too many of those stories from the people back in the day. right? A lot of those stories died with them. So we want to really, we want this to be a platform where we honor the people who are in the arena, right? People who are builders, the people who are visionaries, and we really welcome them into this space. So Kyle, thank you again for really stopping by the Afropolitan podcast. What do you have planned for the rest of the year, and what are you excited for even coming into next year?
For the rest of the year, we're entering into chill mode. We just wrapped up our second cohort of the Accelerator program. Demo day was yesterday. So now the work begins to really help them unlock those opportunities, raise that capital, help them grow. But we're coming into Christmas and Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so naturally, there's a sort of like slowdown that will occur. Mm-hmm. My dad passed. Christmas was a big time for my family. My family is big as well. And so I'm going to need that time to navigate the emotions that will come. For me personally, it's going to be a tricky time. But coming into 2022, we're super, super excited about our Accelerator program because we had such good feedback around it. And we really want to evaluate how we can tweak and make things a lot better. And definitely being able to make that official announcement around the fund and what we're going to do on our thesis around it. And that sort of thing. So yeah, some big things are about to happen in 2020. Mm-hmm. And actually today, I just announced on my social media within Trinidad, I was voted as one of the top three entrepreneurs of 2021. I find out in days if I'm the number one entrepreneur for 2021. So it's cool. It's really cool.
No, Kyle, man, you are blazing. I think from the first moment I met you, I felt your passion. And I was like, this is somebody, because a lot of the stuff is building long-term relationships with long-term people, right?
Correct.
So, thank you. And I want to say, I want to extend my condolences to you for the passing of your dad. But I do want to let you know that he will always be proud of you, bro. Like, please, like, we got work to do, but you are blazing the path. So thank you again for stopping by the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Afropolitan podcast. We are building the future of a progressive Black community. To join our community, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Afropolitan. Be sure to join our Discord and Clubhouse community by clicking on the link tree on our Instagram page. See you on social.